Peter King here, reminding you to subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Peter King, as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer and the 10 Things MMQB podcast.
All right, coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast today is Pam Oliver of Fox Sports. I think you guys are going to enjoy a really interesting conversation with someone who's been at the top of her field for a long time.
Sports Illustrated presents the Media Podcast with Richard Deitch. Powered by digital media. Find your voice. Now, your host, Richard Deitch.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Lou Pellegrino. And this week, our guest is the Fox NFL reporter, Pam Oliver. You've seen her on NFL sidelines since the 1990s for Fox, also done a lot of long-form and short-form features for that organization. Prior to that, worked at ESPN. We had a really interesting conversation that I think you're going to enjoy that included Pam's process, how she does what she does, what kind of access she has today versus the access that existed in the 90s in the NFL, which teams are open to reporters on the sidelines, which teams are not. And then Pam gets into what was a very difficult situation for her, where a couple years ago, her bosses came down to Atlanta to essentially remove her, not just from the number one team, but from NFL coverage as well. And she basically talked herself back into a job. She's now on the number two team in Fox doing exceptional work, and I think has proved to her bosses, who I think probably would admit this too, that they were short-sighted there and that they almost made a decision that would have hurt their network. So we're going to get into a lot of things. Probably we'll finish the podcast with talking about Troy Aikman, who Pam considers a brother. Troy Aikman has said on this podcast he considers Pam Oliver a sister. And so I think you're going to enjoy it. One of the pioneers in the business, Pam Oliver of Fox Sports.
The Media Podcast.
All right, and as promised, we bring in Pam Oliver of Fox Sports, someone I've wanted to get on this podcast for a long time. Pam, first, I apologize for being 2 minutes late on the
You're
call.
You're 2 minutes
to you.
Late, yes. I want that time on the back end.
You have that time on the back end. And a formal welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Why, thank you. How long has it been? What am I, like the thousandth guest?
I think you're number 79, oh. Pam, but number one in all our hearts, number 79 on the official list.
I'll take it.
All right, Pam, I have known you for a while, and we've certainly talked over the last couple years. And what's interesting to me is when I talk to people who, and you, along with being a sideline reporter, you've done studio interviews, you've been a correspondent, you've covered other sports. People mostly know you for the NFL, but you've done a lot during your career. But it's always interesting to me that the public really doesn't know, as a general rule, what people on the sidelines do for the weekend, including the games. Because so much of your reporting either never gets on the air or sometimes, or a lot of times, gets filtered through the broadcasters. So let's start with this. What should the, and you can go as long as you want, what should the public know about NFL sideline work that it doesn't?
I think, first of all, a common misconception is that they tell us what to say and that, you know, we're being fed all of these things in our ear, which sort of says to me that a lot of people think, well, obviously they don't know what they're talking about, or they couldn't know what they're talking about because it's the NFL or it's some other sport that, you know, is kind of male-dominated, you know, in one sense, from the broadcasting end. So that's one thing that drives me crazy. But I think as much time as goes into the preparation of the play-by-play and the analyst is about as much time as we spend, which is hours and hours and hours a day, reading about, you know, everything that pertains to our game, a lot of stuff that doesn't pertain to our game but pertains to let's just say, you know, a particular stadium or a particular atmosphere. So it's kind of all of those things, but it's much more than waiting for a guy to break his ankle. There are things that I go into a game with, stories I prepared from conversations during the week that, you know, in a perfect world, if it played into a, you know, a scenario during the broadcast, it would be an excellent, what we call an ad. So you can have you know, a story on a quarterback and then like Russell Wilson, but you've talked to various people during the week and, you know about really just the things that he went through to prepare for a game a week after an MCL sprain. So you're always looking to be an addition to the broadcast, not, you know, something that, you know, they throw it down to the field and the whole conversation comes to a screeching halt because there's just too much of an effort to pivot. So you're looking for things that will add to the broadcast, not necessarily just be the place where everything goes to die. That's how I've always viewed it.
Pam, you want
to be a help to the broadcast.
You're coming off doing the Seahawks-Jets game yesterday when we're taping this. We're taping this the Monday after that game. So as a to give the listeners a sense, in terms of the pre-reporting that you did to what you ultimately got on the air, how much of the stuff that you worked on during the week ultimately made air yesterday?
Zero.
Wow.
Yeah. It's almost like you can't become attached to your information that you feel because the game flow has a lot to do with it. A lot of times at that particular moment, you can't sell the producer on, you know, an angle that you are able to get. Early in the year, I usually reserve my reporting for a particular game on that Sunday, you know, describing players, talking to coaches. And then as the season goes on, I'll expand in terms of just the number of people that I talk to during the week. So if you talk to a guy before the game just about Russell's preparation, what you saw, can you believe it? You know, that could be an ad. But on most, I'm telling you, Richard, on most Sundays, you can go in with seven or eight kind of stories that you felt like that you've developed on your own. And depending on the broadcast and the flow of the broadcast, you can get absolutely zilt on, or you can get two or three. So it's just every weekend's different. It's just it becomes not about you and what you think, you know, oh my God, I've got this really good story. I talked to this person. But if it has nothing to do with the game and the flow of the game, you just know that's dead. That's not going to work. But you've had valuable time with some people that could help you later in terms of just getting information. Sometimes it's just not all about your report and what you're able to get on. You're gathering information you can share in production meetings. You can share with the guys upstairs. Kevin and John are particularly generous in attribution in something that I may have gathered during the week that I know is not a sideline, typical sideline report. I share my information with them. They're very good. It's this crew, and I'm not saying that this wasn't true of my former crew, but this crew is very, very aware of just sharing the information. And it's not something that you feel like, okay, I got this, so I've got to hoard it, or, you know, this is my stuff, and I gathered this, so I'm not going to. No, it's none of that. I think I was slow on Chris Ivory had gotten ill before the game in Jacksonville. And John said, you know, there's something going on with Chris Ivory. Okay. Everything I did, what I was expecting to do early, I scrapped it and started on that. And I went to the team to ask, you know, more about it because they weren't going around saying it, but someone had shared this with John, and John said, Pam, you might want to look into this. It was just, you know, it was just like that. So sometimes you get information, sometimes you're lucky like that. I don't want to call it luck because he was ill, but at that point, I really have an adrenaline rush when it's right there and it's happening, and it's up to you to dig for information 15 minutes before air. So that really, really excites me. But, you know, I had a report that we thought would work, the Packers and the Heat and all of that, their preparation and all of that to get acclimated and how they anticipated things would go, like with hydration specialists and all that. But then, you know, then this thing happens, and that's like later for that. You know, this is news. It's not really something that's out there yet, or you don't know to what degree he had gotten ill. It was very mysterious, and but at the same time, he wasn't going to be available. And, you know, that's the kind of thing you want. That's reporting to me. I don't necessarily go into the game with, oh, I've got this stuff I got gathered earlier in the week. I like the kind of immediacy of game day stuff. But you never know what's going to, you know, what you're going to get on and what you're not. And it's really not about you. It's just really about the group, the broadcast, wanting to leave the stadium feeling like I contributed, and together as a whole, we were fantastic today.
And the Kevin and John, Pam referenced Kevin Burkhart and John Lynch. That's the play-by-play announcer and the analyst that she works with on Fox's team. Pam, you've been on the sidelines for a long time, so you would have a sense of how access has changed. What is it like for you today in terms of access to the team, access to players, coaches, versus what it was like when you started on the sidelines at Fox in the 90s? Has it gotten better, worse?
I think it's better. Okay. I really do. I feel like there's a sense of, because I've been around for so long, and sadly, a lot of these kids are like, oh, I used to watch you when, you know, I was like a baby. I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. So you're familiar to a lot of people, and at that point, I think they learned what you're about. So I find access a lot easier because I can sort of cut through that, well, I don't know her, why would I say anything to her? As opposed to, you know, being familiar to coaches and players and trainers. And so I feel like the access is better. When I first started, it was different because I was thrown into sideline reporting. I was hired to do features for our pregame show, and they would send me out to front the feature at whatever stadium. It was, seemed like it was typically involving the Cowboys. So, and then it'd be like, while you're there, just, you know, just kind of patrol the sidelines and, you know, if anything happens. So I was like, okay, I have no idea how to do this. I can figure it out. I just know there's information to be had and go get it. So, you know, that's kind of how that whole sideline thing started. I didn't have any kind of roadmap or somebody with me to say, well, this is what you want to look for. These are the things. Just keep an eye on the trainer. If he's working with somebody, you know, that's potentially something that could impact a certain team if they lose this particular player. This is just, that's just a tidbit. So, I feel like the NFL has really done a good job of, you know, impressing upon teams that they're not there to hurt you. It should be some sort of partnership. I don't feel quite comfortable with that, but had many debates with people about that. And so you just kind of figure it out, and what kind of access you're able to get, I think a lot of times is up to the individual. You'd be surprised how many people will tell you things, and you have to really, sometimes you have to choose, do I report this, or should I let this person know that I can be trusted and that this is not something, this was a private conversation, and there's no reason for me to go on with some information that you've given me that was really not in the proper context of just, I'm telling you this because I know you will and can report it. You know, you have a lot of private conversations, but you've got sources, you've got people you can go to. And as a reporter, that is critical to what you do. And having access is, you know, huge. Like with the Patriots, you're not going to get any, you know, going in. Don't even cry in your soup after it's over. You're not going to get anything. You're barely going to get access. Do not approach players on Sunday, which is where it's such a valuable time for me, that those early hours before the game, you know, players come out, they warm up, and you can approach them. But the Patriots, for example, don't talk to our players. Don't talk to our coaches. There's somebody actually watching. I've been, you know, chewed away, you know, by a couple of players. I'm like, Pam, we can't talk to you. You know, they're watching. I'm like, oh, that's kind of, you know, much, but okay. And, you know, I know going in, forget it. There will be nobody will be available to you. There's no access on that side because it is a decision that they made years ago. Not going to change. You're nobody special. So you just have to learn when things are kind of going to be just more available to you than you can forget it. There's not going to be anything, move on. So focus on the other team.
Pam, what know? That's interesting. So what's the converse? What organizations historically for you have been very open and are, for lack of a better phrase, very media friendly?
I find actually the top tier teams are very accommodating. I feel like they go into it. I'm not trying to name names or anything like that, but I just feel like the top tier teams are like, okay, this can be nothing but good for us. You know, but there are things that they want to keep quiet. They don't want a particular injury released. You know, it has to go out Saturday, but if somebody gets sick Sunday morning, falls down a flight of stairs, they're not obligated to tell you things like that. So you really have to go in and, you know, you learn who's who and who's going to be a little more helpful than the next guy. So Cowboys, Giants, Packers, Eagles, and a lot of it depends on the coaching regime. So you got to take that into account. Some coaches are more, you know, they keep it to the vest and it's not – come on in. Yeah, anything you want to know, if we can help you with anything, you're not always going to get that. But I just thought some of the top tier teams they play the game. They understand that this is part of the drill. And we get these access at these production meetings. You can spend, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes with like an Aaron Rodgers or Mike McCarthy. And, you know, I don't think any questions are off limits. You know, well, this is appropriate, this is not, this has nothing to do with the game. You know, talked to Michael Bennett the other day with the Seahawks, and he's not in contract dispute, but he wants a better contract with the Seahawks. And that was something, you know, you can say, well, is that a chip on his shoulder? Does that, you know, carry over in any sort of way about, like, you know, that part, I think the quote was, the business part of football is sucky. So, okay, but that goes back to your question about access, and those production meetings are key. And again, you're going to have teams. It's really, really, Richard, it's just like a handful of teams that are just like, but you know, going in, and you sometimes have to go around that and find a way to get what you need. And sometimes you're going to be successful, sometimes you're not, but I find more often than not that it's going to be, kind of a collaborative thing. Okay, I'll tell you this, whatever, you know, not whatever you need to know, but you have that access, you have a couple of hours in those production meetings the day prior or the Friday prior to a game where you can gather as much information as you want, you know, because you should go into a game informed. And sometimes you're going to be successful with the contribution from the teams, but, you know, a few times you're not.
Pam, the at the highest level of sideline reporting, whether it's Doris Burke, Michelle Tafoya, yourself, Andrea Kramer, we've talked about this before. There's no question that the job is journalism or reporting or however you want to label it. And the people who take the job seriously like that approach it as reporters, and it's very, very valuable to viewers, which is why it's we're allowed to curse on this podcast, by the way, Pam, which is why it's bullshit when people sort of just say that the position is nothing more than entertainment or eye candy. That said, you're someone who has been in the business a while, and when you're not obviously working, you can watch sports on television, so you're a good person to ask. Has the position itself, the sort of role of sideline reporter, do you see it more today as journalism, or do you see it more today as entertainment, or do you see it more today as something else? So I'm asking it as an overall independent.
I certainly don't feel like it's about journalism, you know, anymore. I really don't. I feel a lot of times there are demographics that play heavily into decisions about, you know, putting, you know, a sideline reporter on the field. Some people have gone from no sideline reporters to sideline reporters for every single game or crew. So, but I feel like either you're in it for journalism or you're in it, I call it, to win it. And that means just sort of, you know, the celebrity that can come from it, you know, be in front of 20 million, 30 million viewers a weekend. I feel like the training was different for the group of women that you mentioned. We, were reporters before there was a sideline reporter category. So, my background was in news. And then from there, I sort of stumbled into this sports thing. And, it's been great. But I always try to remember my training and where I came from. And, when it was a matter, you weren't, you didn't have all of these social media things to, some people are really into that. And I just don't get that part of it. What does that have to do with what you're doing to prepare for a game? And I understand the game of that, but I don't play the game. It's just not interesting to me, and it's not worth it to me. It's like, oh, look, I just talked to Cam Newton. Well, you're supposed to.
Right.
Let's not celebrate that. That's what you're supposed to do in the course of your job. So I just feel like things have definitely gone in a different direction to a point to where you look at among the group, the group that you mentioned, we call, we'll look at a particular reporter that's coming up and we're like, oh, okay. We call her one of us. Okay. She's one of us from the standpoint of that. She doesn't make it about her. And I feel that way about Allie LaForce. I feel like, she's the whole package, but to me, first and foremost, she's really interested in doing her job from a professional standpoint and just being in it she steps back a little bit. I feel like the girl is a star, and I think, we recognize that she is the total package, but if she doesn't, like, her looks are not what she promotes.
Right. That's interesting. I agree with you. I think Allie LaForce has done really good work and makes it about the work mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to her. On this same topic, Pam, and this maybe is not the case so much at the national level, but man, is it the case at the more of the local level? Why do mm-hmm. viewers not see more women of color appearing on the sidelines? We see a lot of 24-year-old, mm-hmm. let's be honest, we see a lot of very attractive 24-year-old white women, 28-year-old white women. And again, nationally, it's a little better. There's Lisa mm-hmm. Salt, there's yourself. The diversity is better. But as a general rule, locally, it's the same archetype. It's usually a blonde woman who's white mm-hmm. in her 20s. Why is that the case?
Yeah, and God bless them, go to town. But I also feel that there is that, where's the next generation? Where they can go and learn what they need to learn, make their mistakes at that level, and then sort of progress up the food chain. When I go to various cities, I pop on the local news and, I see a particular look, and it usually does not involve an African-American woman. I have these young girls coming up to me all the time. I want to do what you do. And sometimes I'll say, well, you might have to go the long way. There may be, some resistance. I just think these guys doing the hiring, and yes, guys doing the hiring, the men in these management positions just think like, well, okay, let's do the eye candy thing. And I'm not saying all of these women who are on air and who happen to be blonde and have a, beautiful and all, I'm not saying that they are incompetent. I'm not, I just feel like the people making these decisions, let's at least be original, step out of the pattern a little bit, have an open mind about who it is you're going to use as a sideline reporter. But to me, the key word is reporter. And that's not about, I think, propping somebody up or, I think it's just about tenacity, your ability to do the work, your desire to do the work, preparing. And I just feel like the people who are making decisions to put people in place, particularly on the sideline, just need to just kind of be nudged in some sort of way to consider a different person, a different look. Let's base it on the resume that this person brings. Let's do it the old-fashioned way. Let's make sure they're, know what they're talking about. They have a resume. They, instead of like, okay, that would be a good demographic for us. This appeals to this group, whoever, men are watching football, but women are watching football. And it's not like, you know, we sit there and turn to a particular game because this particular sideline reporter is on that game. No, people want to see the game. It's not about who the sideline reporter is, I don't think. I just think you build a team and you want the best team possible. You don't want any weak links. You just want to, you know, have a group that you trust and that, you know, if all hell breaks loose, that they can handle it, and they can handle it from, you know, just a point that their looks don't matter, you know, that they can get in there, know what to ask, know what to look for, and that it's not about, you know, a particular, I know, let's just do it the way it should be done. And I, you know, I feel these management people, men, are in such a position, you know, across the board. It's not like you go from ABC, NBC, you know, the people that have, you know, different levels of crews to staff. To me, they're making all the same decision. There's no originality.
I agree.
You know, let's look for somebody. Is it who has the best agent or who has the most, you know, Twitter followers? I don't know what they're doing, but I don't think they're doing the best job.
I agree. I think I'm more of a cynic on this. I'm not sure things will change until either the demographics of the management changes, particularly if you get more women in management.
Yeah.
You know, you follow this. Stephanie Drewley at ESPN now has a lot of power, and that's a chance to maybe reshape.
I work with Stephanie.
Yeah, at ESPN. That's a chance to reshape the business.
We were in the trenches together, so I think that's fantastic, you know?
Yeah, I agree. You mentioned social media. You are not active on social media yet, and you know this. You are often the topic of conversation of some on social media. What has it been like for you, and do you want to know what's being said? And in particular, okay, you don't know. So you're aware that people seem to always comment on your appearance, but you don't want to hear anything about what's Pam Oliver's hair like today, which you know has been an absurd source of Twitter commentary sometimes.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't go into the day like, okay, how jacked up could I possibly look? But I do my part in terms of, you know, the appearance thing, and then I get to the stadium or the venue, and then it's like I feel if I can remember to put on a little lip gloss, then, you know, that's cool. My husband even says, you need to touch up a little bit, you know. You know, you had lip gloss on 4 hours ago, you know, touch up a little bit. But I get it. I get that there's just this kind of ridiculous obsession with that. But then you'll hear the thing that, you know, that gives me pleasure is that a lot of people don't go there. Just like, what, you know, she's good at what she does. And I feel like there are enough hours in the day to be all of that, be all things to all people, but it's not really going to make a difference if you want to be mean and be, you know, take the precious time out of your day to get on Twitter or whatever, and then just, or, you know, just like try to obliterate somebody. But my thing has always been, it would be harmful, it would be hurtful to me if I paid attention to it. But I just feel like you can't go with the good or the bad. You can always have people praising you and just love what you do, and then you're going to have people that want to just constantly, you know, chip at you in that way. And because I'm not really participating in that whole party, it just makes for a really happier life. You know, you can say that I have a thick skin and it doesn't bother me. Sure it bothers me when it, you know, my awareness of it is higher. But it's just, I'm just oblivious to it. It doesn't mean I don't get the vibes and I don't hear about it. And now it just became this whole, hair thing. So, you know, you wish that wasn't the case, and it's unfortunate. I don't want anything overshadowing, you know, the work that I do. But there's some people who are going to just that's what they're obsessed about. They got on the train, the train took off, and it's just picking up, you know, passengers as it goes along. But damn, I don't have time really to worry about it.
It's probably the smart way to handle it. I imagine you have a Twitter account just to check the news, but you're not one who's really active on social media.
My last tweet was November 2 years ago.
Wow.
That's my last tweet. And I think, you know, I don't play the game of, well, I gotta get more followers. I don't know what half this stuff means. So you tag somebody, and then that leads to it being spread. I just don't understand it. And I don't want to be a Neanderthal about it, but I just don't care.
You're probably healthier, actually, to stay off it. And this is someone who has to be on it all the time. So good on you for that. excuse me. One of the things, Pam, and again, you can go as much into this as you want, or you don't have to go into it at all. But me and you have a history in terms of stories that that I've written regarding your move from Fox's number one team to, at one point, perhaps not being on the NFL coverage, which I certainly made clear what I thought about when Fox put that out there, to now being on Fox's number two team and really gelling with that group. And obviously, it seems to me that you're enjoying your time there. But that's a long preamble to ask you, how do you feel today about not being on the top team with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, particularly in a Super Bowl year, given that you have done many Super Bowls for Fox?
Yeah. I think the hardest one was the first year when, you know, I knew I was not going to be like the NFC Championship game. So instead of just sort of, that was hard because I always done it, and you know, to have that not, you know, so that weekend you're a viewer instead of like being right there in the thick of it. And, you know, I think earning that right. So it was hard because really this is corny. The people that you've worked with forever, you know, 10, 12, 15 years. So that was hard to, that was kind of really abrupt. Things were sort of ripped from you that way. But it just seems like forever ago. It just seems like forever ago that I was that crushed and I was that, you know, kind of out of sorts. So a lot has happened between then and then. But at the time, it was definitely difficult. So this year, I've had plenty of time to process that. Well, you know, my last Super Bowl was, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. That was my last Super Bowl, you know, probably for my career. So the beginning was definitely challenging. But then I actually had a party for that first year I was not doing the championship game. So I had a party, you know. I was just like, I needed a distraction, honey. So I was serving people and moving from room to room and just doing what I could do mentally to kind of get through that. But it just seems like that was a lifetime ago. And I think because of where I landed and, you know, how quickly you just have to adjust and sort of move on, that was whirlwind. I go from, like you said, no NFL games potentially to, you know, going back to the sidelines with the number two person. I'm really curious about, and it's kind of annoying too, is that everywhere I've gone, I get these, you know, but I thought you retired. I said there was probably an attempt to retire me, but now I'm, you know, why should I, you know, if, you know, it's like going to you, Richard, and said, okay, you know, you've had a good run, you know, when are you going to retire?
Right.
Well, to me, retirement is something you do when you're, you know, I want to be a lifer. I always said that. I want to be a TV lifer. I'm not saying a, you know, NFL sideline reporter lifer. But, you know, this business, I didn't get into it to be a sideline reporter. I wanted to be a reporter, period. And people are like, do you call yourself a... Well, you know, people are like, aren't you... shouldn't you, like, have graduated onto, like, you know, anchoring or doing something like that, hosting? And I don't necessarily consider that the end-all, be-all to me. It's not... It was never something I just said, oh, I've got to do that or I'm nothing. I've never viewed it that way. So when people kind of look at the role that I'm doing and say, you know, geez, how long can you do this? Well, you know, as long as you can do what you love. You know, I don't go around asking you, well, you know, let's put a cap on this whole thing. You should retire or need to retire. And then if I do retire, people, that's not the last you're going to hear from me, because I will continue to do, as long as I need a job, I will continue to do something that I love, which is journalism, reporting, and it's not necessarily to be in a specific role as a sideline reporter. That just happened. And so I do, I can look at the games with the number one people and not just feel like, that should be me. No, I don't really do that anymore. I have my relationships. Particularly close to Troy, but now it's just kind of from a distance. I don't spend every Saturday with him, or Friday through Sunday with him. So, it gets easier, definitely. And I try to find what the lesson was supposed to be in all of that. And I think it had to be that things change. You try to go with the flow as much as you can, but then you fight back where you feel like you need to fight back. May be successful, may not, but I can sleep better knowing that at least my voice is heard.
Pam, do you,
loud and clear.
Do you, and again, I realize I'm asking you a question about your bosses, but do you feel in a certain way that you sort of proved to them in the last couple of years that their first instinct was incorrect? And, you have now, by the way, been praised by the same people who wanted to remove you from the NFL for your work on the number two team. So, again, I'm an objective observer here. It's my read that your work over the last couple of years, I think, has proved to them that their instinct initially was way off. And I wonder if you feel similarly as well, given your work the last couple of years with this new team.
I actually I butt heads with my bosses, but I do respect that they have to do what they feel is in the best interest of the company. I don't feel they always get it right, but it's, and I'm not saying it's just particularly for my case. I just feel like I'm an employee. They're my bosses. There's a necessary level of respect that they should and are afforded, and that I just feel like my situation thing could have been handled a lot better. I think they know that, but it worked out, like it worked out, and that was like, to me, it was a fluke the way it worked out. It was just that I don't think it was like, oh my God, you've done such a great job with the two guys. I feel like, everything that was promised about the FS1 side was not going to happen. And, you see how that a lot of that stuff has been dismantled. So
right.
What I was supposed to do as the senior correspondent, she says, was to, do in-depth stuff and, develop things. And, now we all see there was no place for that. There is no place for that in the current format that is FS1. So I think a lot of, where I landed and just has to do with, I felt like, maybe I had a new energy that I needed to have, but I also feel like it just kind of occurred to them that your top NFL sideline reporter goes from the top to like nowhere.
Right.
There's no place for her to be. And I think my comment to them was that I want to continue on with the sideline thing at my current spot or spot of your choosing. So from that standpoint, I was still saying, you mean there's nowhere that no crew of your NFL people that you feel I'm deserving of, being moved to. So they shocked the hell out of me one day with a call that says, okay, I was treating this, I think it was a playoff game. Yeah, Seattle playoff game. I was treating that as my last game. I was taking pictures and having players sign my flip cards and all of that. And then on Monday or Tuesday, I get a call about, could you stay and continue in this role? And I was blown away. I'm like, what are you talking about? I processed it. And I'm like, and to me, if you're going to be at Fox, I think the thing for me was that if I'm going to be at Fox, I want to be on the NFL. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to be disappeared. You're not going to have this opportunity to kind of scoop me out. So, you know, I thought about it. I took a long time and longer than I think they wanted. I think they wanted a release put out immediately, but I hadn't decided that I wanted to stay or, you know, continue on with it. Because I was so, Richard, I was so processed, mentally processed out.
Right.
I had, you know, done my thing. I sort of was saying goodbye. John Lynch, he always kills me. He said, Joe, you just did a Brett Favre. And then it's like, well, you know, maybe this could be it. And he's like, oh, stop being Brett Favre. You know, but at the time, it wasn't funny. It was, I was confused. I was flat out confused and could not decide or, you know, what to do, because I was looking forward to the other stuff that was promised. I was looking forward to that.
Right.
And so I was losing one thing, but I felt like I was gaining another thing. And then the other thing that I was gaining was obviously not going to happen. And I think that's why I kind of threw out there I just blurted it out. I don't know how much I really meant it, that I want to continue sideline in my current capacity or with a crew of your choosing. So that it's crazy how this whole thing, you know, came about. But as it is now, I'm happy. I'm just happy with the whole deal, that I continue to do a job that I love, and I'm with really great people, and I had been with really great people, and I was lucky to land where I landed. You know, I call it a pot of gold.
Right.
And it is. We spend time, we are just, I mean, it is so fun. We went to Del Frisco Saturday night, and I think dinner came at 10, and we were leaving at 9 o'clock the next day, and we were all concerned about, you know, what this meal was going to do to us. And we just sat around a table, like 15 of us, and it was just one big laugh fest. So that's important to me, that you're with a group of people that, you know, appreciate each other, which I had with the A crew. I'm not saying that at all. We had tons of fun too. And we went through a lot of things together, you know, losing your parents, you know, having children, just all sorts of things, marriages, divorces, all of that. We went through that together. So that, you know, you form a bond in that. But now I have a new bond with people that I really care about and just feel lucky to be with and a part of at this stage of my career. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
All right, just a couple things there just to sort of to back up what Pam was saying. The FS1 thing that Pam was going to do, which would have been in-depth interviews, mm-hmm. Obviously FS1 really no longer is in news anymore, so there's really no capacity or would have been no capacity for mm-hmm. her to do that. And I will give Fox credit, particularly Eric Shanks and John Enns, who are Pam's mm-hmm. bosses, who did come around and I think made a very smart call and have been rewarded by Pam on that call. And then lastly, Pam, I hope everybody charged the dinner to Eric Shanks and did not pay yourself.
It makes its way back to
to the bosses.
To it makes yeah. its way there.
One last thing on this, Pam, and I'd be remiss not asking it, is after all of this has gone down, what is your relationship like with Aaron Andrews? And I don't want to say do you fault her on any of this, but were there any feelings her way, given that you know, ultimately she ended up as the in the A position, and I think very clearly probably was not coming to Fox without a promise that she was going to get a prominent NFL mm-hmm. role.
You know what? I don't really have a relationship with her. Our paths don't really cross. But I'm sorry about my dog.
Yeah, it's okay.
I said, what was she to do? Turn it down? That was the thing that I always went back to. What if I was, let me move upstairs. I don't, you know, it's just not what you do, but you know, she's not a bench warmer. You know, it's not, the capacity that she's in. Sorry.
What is the dog? We like when this stuff happens. What's the dog's name?
Please shut up. This is Jet. He is named after Jethro Pugh.
Oh, really? Jet? Not Kenny the Jet Smith. Jethro Pugh.
Jeffrey Pugh.
Yeah, right. The famous cowboy defensive player.
Grew up with the Dallas Cowboys in my home. So, and now he's following me. But anyway, I just feel like we were just, it was going to be a situation where we were pitted against each other.
Right, I understand.
But I don't think, Jesus, Jet. I don't think there was any face-to-face kind of, you know, thing. We never had an argument. We never, when we were both doing the same job together on the same crew. So I don't blame her for any of this. You know, you don't turn it down.
Right.
You know, there is crystal clear to, I think everybody but me, that when the hire was made, that it was going to impact me. I remember foolishly someone asked me, well, how does this impact you? I said, I don't think it does. I think there's room for everybody, naively. So there was no reason, I think, for her and me to be enemies. I think people love to, you know, play that up, but there was no face-to-face, you know, our paths don't really cross. Of course, we knew of each other coming in, and there was no way to think that it was, there was no promise made to her.
Right.
We both understand that. And I think most people understand that, you know, it was a big splashy hire.
Yep.
And with the big splashy hire, you know, I think she started on the group that I'm on now, which was at that point C or D or however they label it. And, but, you know, most people saw through that, you know, that was kind of a temporary thing, I guess, for me to get through the last 2 years of my contract, or whatever. But I don't blame her, because if I was in that position, the situation was reversed, you know, you want to be on the top, you know, you want to be with the top crew. I think that's what you should aspire to do. You know, there's going to be collateral damage, you know, there's going to be some sort of, and these things can get messy, and I think that one did. But to personally hold her responsible is something I don't do. You know, this is a business, this is your career. However way it works out, you know, I didn't look at it as like some ill-gotten gain or anything like that. It's just, you know, the business of television. It's a business just like everything else. And, you know, when new management comes in any new job, you know, I was talking to someone at NBC the other day, and it was the same thing. You know, when Comcast acquired them, things changed, and different people at Fox, new management comes in. And, you know, it's like, well, you're free to do what you're free to do. But, you know, the people that I work with and had been there, you know, the longest, you know, systematically, it was, you know, kind of adios. And we all know that that's the business, that it's across the board, any profession. That's the thing. So you can always be replaced. Always be replaced. And that's one of the lessons, you know, that have come from it. I never thought I was, you know, all that to where I could not be replaced. I think we've seen that throughout, I think, since Fox's acquisition of football, when they first came on the air, that, you know, I was second, I think. Everybody thinks I was there from the beginning. I was there. I came a year later. When they wanted to make a change with the female NFL presence. So I got a job that someone else had, and that's how it's going to be, you know. But to say it's a personal kind of thing, no. I think you have to work on, though, not being misguided or pushed in the direction that the tide is going in terms of your feelings one way or the other. But I don't think you blame the person who then takes your spot.
I appreciate you answering that.
Don't do that.
Yeah, no.
I
appreciate it, and it's right. And it's a business, and Aaron Andrews' business is to get the best deal for her. Pam Oliver's business is to get the best deal for her, and that's how the business is. All right, a couple more things here, Pam, as we will start to wrap up. Is there somebody in the league right now who you have yet to do any kind of interview with, be it short form or long form, just because your paths have not crossed given your Fox games, that you really would like to, you know, sort of sit down and like do some something in depth with? Like, obviously this week you might have had a shot to do Russell Wilson. Is there someone in the league that really interests you that for whatever reason you just have not come across yet?
No, I'm not really. I'm out of the whole, you know, interview sit downs and all that stuff. I don't do pregame anymore. So, my satisfaction comes with kind of reading their backstory. You know, when my NFL packets come in for the two teams that are playing that weekend, I immediately dive into the features part of it. I think to understand or to, you know about their background, it kind of sets you up for, you know, what they are now. So a lot of my, you know, chances to talk to these guys about other aspects of their lives, not just football, comes from the time that we spend together in those production meetings. And sometimes I get way off topic because I'm so interested in that person and the other stuff that goes with that. And I think, you know, our histories and our past and our background obviously help form who we've become. And that's no different from what, you know, athletes experience. So I think I'm more of the generation of Quinn. You know, you got access to, you know, Brett Favre when he was, you know, going through his transition, or just having these in-depth conversations. I remember a nice Dante Culpepper talk. I just remember talking to him about, you know, some of the issues that came up with the whole black quarterback thing. That's always interesting, but now I think it's less and less of a topic. But just spending time, when I did features, that's where I just kind of, I feel thrived, and I miss doing them. I did a piece on a young man, Marcus Dixon. He had been in the situation that in Georgia.
Right, yeah.
In Georgia, I was aware of it.
Yep.
Yeah, so I was able to sell that as a feature. And so those were the kind of stories, you know, with the whole falsely accused rape accusation, yep, and all of that. But that still, here he is trying to make his dream of being an NFL professional player come true. Despite that history that he had, despite losing a scholarship at Vanderbilt, he still, you know, so those are the kinds of stories, Richard, that I'm interested in and sort of float my boat. But I can't say that there's any one person that I, you know, feel like I just like it all. I think you can always find some sort of nugget about somebody that can really propel a whole different conversation rather than, oh, look, you know, he's good. He's good on, you know, look at his drop back. He's got a perfect drop back and his, you know, he's so accurate. You can always do that. But I just feel like knowing what that person is about, you know, and how they came up, those are the things that I'm really interested in. I call it sort of just my curiosity is crazy. You know, right now I'm like the president of the Philippines who's going around murdering anybody that he thinks is a suspected drug dealer. And I came across that because President Obama canceled the trip. Now, what does that have to do with anything? I'm all over the place. The things that I'm interested in, but I'm a citizen of the world.
Right.
And I told this young lady that yesterday. Be that first, and then, you know, the other stuff, you know, you have to do for your job. But obviously you're curious about that. But there's a big old world out there, and participate in it.
You'll come back for the political podcast. We'll do part two on this, Pam.
Here's
the final thing I want to ask you about. And we have a lot of it's a lot of young people who listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. You have done, you know, you have spoken in a lot of places. I remember watching you on video at Medill, mm-hmm, which was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. You, your own background, which we didn't really get into in television, you've worked, mm-hmm, all over the country, right? Buffalo,
yeah.
Huntsville, Tampa, I think, right?
Albany, Georgia. That's where I started.
Georgia, right? And then Houston, maybe? Yep. Does that sound right?
Yeah, Houston.
Okay,
Houston,
so that's
where I went from news to sports.
News from sports, okay.
Officially.
So, mm-hmm, and you're from Dallas originally.
Yeah.
Okay, and Florida A&M mm-hmm, grad
I'm
there.
I'm doing a workshop back there next week.
Okay, so that
leads to a true workshop where you go get your hands dirty.
Nice.
Go cover a city council meeting.
Oh, that's cool.
Or not. Yeah.
So will that lead?
And you're going to turn the story. It's going to be a deadline. None of this whole, well, I'm going to Google this and see what happens. You're not going to watch it. You
right.
know, it's not going to be streamed. You're going to be there at that meeting and turn a story the same day.
Right. Tell those kids to get out there and do shoe leather reporting, Pam.
Exactly.
But this leads,
I'm getting your hands dirty too. Go get your hands dirty.
Exactly.
Because, you know, I want to see if you can meet a deadline. I don't care that you, well, I'm going to read this story, turn it in. No, we're not doing that.
Well, this leads me into the sort of the question of, and the reason I ask this is because there have been a couple of women who have contacted me to try to contact you, and they are young mm-hmm. African American women, and I wonder if you can just give the audience a sense of. You know, there are not ultimately in this business, I guess in every business, you want to emulate someone you see or can touch. So someone like you or Lisa Salters, like you are real. And if I'm a 22-year-old, 18-year-old black girl who wants to get into sports broadcasting, I can see you on TV and imagine it can happen. So I wonder how often over the last, let's say, decade or two, how often do you hear from young people, and what have you told them? Because you are in one of those unique. I mean, I don't know if you like the word pioneer or not, but the reality is, Pam, you are a pioneer in the business, given mm-hmm. that you are black. And I wonder if just mm-hmm. how often you hear from young women of color who want to be in the business, but don't really have a lot of people to role model for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As often as those stories and those opportunities get to me, I am more than happy to spend my time talking to these young girls, because I wish I'd had that. You're so curious and you're hungry to know, and so I am always available if those young ladies eventually, you know, are able to reach me directly. And it's not like I'm saying don't reach me directly, but you know, I don't know how you would,
right.
other than going through the company or whatever, but I feel like that is part of the responsibility. But I feel that way about, you know, young white women. I feel, obviously, but I understand what you're saying with the black women. I feel a responsibility, and it's not something that's drudgery to me. I just feel like this is stuff you can't take with you. My knowledge and understanding and all of that of the business and my job, I think, is to be shared. I, you know, this may not be the best comparison, but I asked Darrell Revis out the other day, you know, at this stage, you're going to be done eventually, you know, and this is stuff you can't, the knowledge and wisdom and the capacity that you've been able to do your job, do it well, I just feel like that's to be shared. And, you know, it's not something you hold on to. It's something that if a young girl needs to know, wants to know, and I understand the frustration, like, how do you get someplace? And my answer, they may not like, you know, go a different route, go small. What if you go to a different, like a small market, really learn television and journalism, really learn that, you know, make your mistakes, you know, have some breakthroughs, go a different path. Don't go the same path as everybody else, because, you know, that's why a lot of people aren't employed. I've been mentoring this young woman from Penn State who, she's worked with me on the sideline for a couple of years as, you know, a runner, but we have deep conversations. She has my phone number, my email, and, you know, I try to walk her through, a lot of this whole thing, because it's a crowded field. A lot of people don't move until they're moved. And then, you know, you just got to figure out how to get a job. And if you're a senior just graduating, you're behind in a lot of ways. You're way behind. You should have something you can show people. And there needs to be a plan to a degree. You don't just walk out the door and then all of a sudden you have a job. It's, you know, I tell these young people, and I understand your question, but I don't necessarily just, you know, center it in one particular way.
Right.
I just feel like I feel a responsibility, obviously, for young women who want to do what I do and look up to me. I just feel like that's a responsibility, but I want to do something. I want to help them reach a dream, and not just, you know, this isn't happening, this is frustrating, it's going to be. But I, you know, my first job was in agriculture. You think I knew anything about agriculture? But that was, to me, it was a path. And that's how I learned. And that's, you know, where I went to make my mistakes. And I got into it, you know, because A, that was my job. And I wasn't turning my nose up at going small, you know, go small and see how that goes. You know, my agent, he gets a lot of young women these, you know, it doesn't take on a whole lot of sports broadcasters, but they can be on their second job. So you never know when you're going to be in a position to stand out. You just have to kind of at least make it easier by being on the air and having a job. And you may start small. It's not going to kill you. That's going to be a chapter in my book. Start small. It's not going to kill you.
You got a you have a title for that book?
That's my message for everybody.
You have a title for that book yet, Pam?
No. I don't. That's I guess I'm going about it ass backwards a little bit because I.
No, the title can be a lash. The hard part is to actually write it. The title will be okay. The title you'll figure out.
Yeah, exactly. But it's going to be personal. It's not going to be, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, steps to achieving success. It's not a Tony Robbins type book, but it's just going to be personal about my life and getting where I was able to get. But, you know, there are a whole lot of sacrifices you make along the way and you miss out on things. So, you know, how I was brought up, the whole family atmosphere, you know, we're a military family and you're constantly moving. So then for me, it was forming attachments and not feeling like, well, I won't be here much longer. We're going to move every 2 years. So it's just all that stuff I feel like could be valuable to young women or young people to see there are just many different layers of a person that you see on television. And those people on television are just as flawed as everybody else. You know, I'm just on television. My work is judged week in and week out. You know, if my hair is working that day, if it's not working that day,
right,
whatever. I was just, did you hear what I said? Or were you so distracted and your little thumbs got to work on your phone that you,
okay. we'll look for that eventually, that book. A lot of Fox people writing books, so that's good. I imagine that will you know, might take a little bit of time to sort of figure out how you want to go with that, and your career is still going on, but that's great. Mm-hmm. I hope you
I've got about 8 chapters. So.
Yeah. Oh, nice. All yeah. right. You're well on your way. All right, Pam, is there anything else that you want to cover that I did not cover before I let you go? You want to bring your dog back into the conversation? What would you like to do?
No, he's gone and finally pooped out.
Is that the only
warm himself out?
Is that the only pet in the Oliver household?
We actually had 4 dogs. And
wow!
In 2 years, we lost 3. They were geriatric and old, diabetes, blind.
Oh, sorry about
so,
that.
So yeah, they had yeah. So it was a tough couple of years, but this one, he makes up for a lot of it. But yeah, we're pet people, so. I have a deep love of animals, in particular my puppies and dogs and all of that. So, yeah, I'm trying to. I always like to have an answer to that, but you're so thorough, Richard. I just think you always cover everything. You know, I don't want to get into anything about hopefully that Hillary Clinton will be our next president, or I don't understand Donald Trump and who.
Pam,
you know,
can't. You're saving this at the 60-minute mark. Where was this? Where was this 40 minutes ago? I would have loved to have gotten to politics with you.
Hey, I just, you know, I was just answering the questions that
were. Where are you voting, Pam? What state?
I'm in Georgia.
Oh, all right. Well, unlike New York, your state, I feel like, is a little bit more in play than mine. So your vote sort of matters.
Exactly. And it's just frightening to me, the possibility.
Yeah, we
president.
Yeah, not gone. Again, it's the first vote in my adult lifetime where I think I am making my vote on the person I think will least blow up the planet, which is so sad, but yet that's the reality of my vote this year, and I imagine for some others as well.
Yeah.
All right, Pam Oliver has been at Fox for many years. You've seen her on the NFL sidelines, but you've also seen her work doing long form features as well for that network. Prior to that, she was at ESPN. In fact, we didn't even get into Pam covering the NBA, which is always interesting, and covered the Dream Team 2, if I remember correctly, Pam, which was an interesting team, I bet, to cover. And then she mentioned all the local stops that she had.
Yeah.
Every time I've talked to Pam over the years, she's always been honest and thoughtful. And particularly when she was going through her situation with Fox, she was really honest and ballsy with me, and I will always have great respect for her.
Well, I would want that in return. You know, I always want that for my interview subjects. Don't BS me. Let's just talk. You know.
Yeah, but the problem is, you know, in this business, Pam, there's a lot of people who they front all the time. They're not really honest. I'm not saying that's the majority, but you know, you work with people too. It's a very reputational profession, and people. They're always sort of trying to Reputation first, maybe before honesty. And maybe absolutely. that's survival.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah, maybe that's the survival instinct. All right, Pam Oliver, it's taken me 79 guests, but I finally got you on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
I don't feel loved right now, but okay.
You know, Troy Aikman once told me.
I don't feel loved.
Troy Aikman once told me that he considers you like a sister, and he said this on his podcast, which was a really, really sweet thing to say. I thought, do you consider him? You same thing? Troy is the white Dallas Cowboys brother you never had.
Yeah, I do, and it's so strange that I used to cover him professionally, and that, you know, it was never personal or anything like that. I was a reporter. He was, you know, the hotshot quarterback, the great quarterback, the Hall of Famer, and then suddenly, you know, we're together for I think 10 years, maybe 12, 10 years, maybe 12. But yeah, he was always so generous, and I just love him, to death.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Troy's a good dude. He's an honest, genuine, good dude.
Yeah.
And people should know that.
I like honesty. And gets us in trouble sometimes, but hey.
Right. All right, Pam, I'm not going to, I'm going to have you on before the 151st guest.
You know what?
We'll do it after the election.
I won't be available, Richard.
you're going to all those other media podcasts.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll be available.
All two of them. All right, Pam.
I appreciate you and I respect you so much.
Thanks, Pam.
You know it's
likewise.
Absolutely.
All right, Pam Oliver of Fox Sports has been the guest. Thank you very much, Pam, for being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
You are welcome. Call me never again.
You're listening to the Media Podcast with Richard Deitch.
All right, back in the studio for a quick wrap-up. My thanks to Pam Oliver, who's always an interesting and an honest person to talk to, and particularly really honest with me as she described the situation when her bosses came down to Atlanta, essentially to remove her from the NFL. And I think she talked her way back into a job and has now proven that that was a wise decision by Fox. She's now on the number two team doing really good work with John Burkhart and Kevin Lynch. Joined now by producer Lou Pellegrino.
Switch that around. Kevin Burkhart and John Lynch.
What did I just say?
John Burkhart and Kevin Lynch.
Let's keep that. I don't want that edited out at all if I screw that up. John Lynch and Kevin Burkhart. Although maybe John Burkhart and Kevin Lynch sounds pretty cool, actually.
Went to high school with a Kevin Lynch, I think.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Listen, Lou, you know, you don't cover this, and you heard Pam for the first time. You've obviously you're a big football fan. I know you've watched her on TV for many years. I think she, if nothing else, gave you a real sense of what her philosophy is and sort of how she approaches the job. And particularly, I do appreciate she does not have to answer all that questions about being removed from the number one team, but she did. And I appreciate that. I just think that's very interesting for the audience to hear.
I was interested by it because I never really heard her side of the story. You know, there's always things in print and in other forms of media that you'll hear, but to hear it from the horse's mouth, to actually hear it from Pam and talk about the situation that she was in, it is sad yet refreshing that she's able to persevere and do what she's doing at such a high level. Because I told you when you said that Pam Oliver was going to be the guest on this week's podcast, she's one of the few people that when she's on TV, I stop and listen to what she says because she has such good nuggets and such good notes of the game that's happening around her and the insight she brings week in and week out since I've been watching football and knew who Pam Oliver was. It's fantastic.
Yeah, she's always been solid, and I'm glad that she's still on the air, and she's been someone I wanted to get on this podcast. And again, you know, I understand Pam's response to this was interesting, but the reality is she is a pioneer, and that there are she provides – you know, you need in our business or really almost any business, but really in the media business, you do rely on role models. Like if you can see someone who's doing what you want to do, you believe it exists. Like if you want to be as a sports writer growing up, like I knew there were sports writers in a press box somewhere writing. I could get and contact them. For Pam, in particular, for young women of color, she has provided over the last two decades like the possibility of something. And there's just not many women of color in those positions. So she's really provided a more important role than maybe she even realizes, even if she doesn't per se look at herself as a pioneer.
My thing that jumped out at me, and yes, you're exactly right, she is a pioneer, but listening to her talk about how young ladies come up to her and say, I want to do what you do, but yet you never see them, I think there's a lot of work that people, men and women together, don't realize goes into being a talent,
definitely,
being a broadcaster. Some people think, oh, that's easy. just stand in front of a camera with a microphone and start talking, and you watch sports and you watch news events and you watch other things happen, and that's how you just report on it. There is so much work that goes in, whether it's meetings, as she talked about, with the rest of the TV crew, talking with players, talking with coaches, talking with other, you know, members of the organizations that they're covering, just to get some little tidbit, some little story. And you look at people who say, I want to do that. But when the hard work really comes to the forefront, and it's, or the task comes to the forefront, they're like, oh my God, I didn't realize I had to do this and meet a deadline and I have to be on time for this. And this is 17 hours a day. Yeah. That's what sometimes this job entails. Sometimes it's standing outside of a courthouse all day waiting for responses and waiting for verdicts to come down. Sometimes it's waiting in press conference rooms, waiting for the coach to come out, and things get delayed. It's a long process, and some people just don't want to put the hard work in. Luckily, Pam did.
Don't you got to say organization as a hockey fan instead of organization?
I'm American.
All right. I love organization. All right, listen. So that's the wrap-up from Lou Pellegrino and myself. Future podcast guests will include Clinton Yates of The Undefeated, formerly of The Washington Post. We just did a really good one with Bill Cowher. So if you haven't heard that, check that out. And then obviously we'll have additional guests as we head through October. My thanks, as always, to the guys at Digital Media. Thanks to the SI Group, that sports podcast, from John Wertheim, Chris Stone, Ryan Hunt, Ben Eagle, my producers, other producers, Bette Marston and Alan Kim. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.